Today, Mark Woodford, of course, he joins us again, SEN tennis commentator for the all-electric Kia EV6 GT supercar. It's a pinnacle of engineering, Kia EV6 GT, the most powerful Kia ever crafted. Mark, good morning, and I know as a dedicated professional and a tennis lover, you would have seen it right through to the last point last night.
Oh, let me just stretch as I'm yawning here in bed. I wish I had made it to the fifth set, but I fell asleep when it went to the beginning of the fifth. I was so tired, obviously, but I woke up early this morning and saw the news that Kokkinakis went down. Wow, amazing, huh?
Woodbridge would have seen it through.
Yeah. Well, he probably had to commentate on it with the TV, but you know us radio people.
So let's start with from Thanasi's point of view. We've had a few people, you know, said I didn't see the whole match. I didn't even see the third set. I went to bed at the end of the second set thinking he was going to win. Was Murray just too good? Was there an element of tightening up from Thanasi? How did you sort of analyse what happened in that third set when he really had the match on his own racket?
Yeah, well, look, something obviously, you know, the momentum switch, you know, Thanasi to come out and take those first two sets and dominate. I mean, he could have won both sets a little easier than what the scoreboard ended up being. But there was a moment in that third set, it kind of switched around. And whether it's Andy Murray's body starting to awaken, you know, look, a tough turnaround time for Murray after that first round match. But, you know, whether Thanasi felt, you know, look, I mean, only Thanasi will be able to answer it. And at the moment, it is probably very raw. He's, you know, no doubt really ticked off that he ended up letting it slip through his hands. But at those moments, you've got to be able to, you know, get over the finishing line. You've got to cancel these guys out in three sets. But it did switch around. Murray's body might have loosened up. There was one rally, I think he had to return four overheads of Thanasi and ended up winning the point. And it is moments like that that a match, whether it's three sets or five sets, can turn it around, and I think that might have instigated deflated Thanasi. It seems strange that it might have, because he was still, you know, strongly in the lead, but I think it just started to chip away at him. And you know, once it got to that fifth set, I kind of was like, oh no, please. Mm-hmm. you know, but it the signs were there that Murray was going to win that in the fifth set.
So what about Andy Murray, Mark? I mean, we played the audio off the top of the show 4 years ago at the Australian Open before his first match. He was basically saying, this could be it. I'm in too much pain. I've tried everything. I can't keep going on like this. 4 years later, he's still winning five-set matches in the second longest match in Australian Open history. I mean, it's phenomenal.
It's breathtaking. And look, the send-off. Remember the send-off that they gave
That's right.
at the Australian Open?
Yeah.
I think there was video tributes, players out on the court waving goodbye. And he's come back. I think they maybe pulled the trigger too soon on the farewell there. I don't think Andy had necessarily made that announcement, but it was kind of, you know, it went that way. But, you know, it's a, look, resilience. Patience, the surgery that he had to undergo, it does take a while to come back from. I saw him play in Adelaide 2 weeks ago, the first match that he played against Sebastian Korda, and I thought it was a sorry sight myself. And I actually was calling it on TV, so I just felt, look, this is going to be a tough summer for Andy Murray. I feel like this is the farewell for him. He just didn't seem to be, you know, moving as well. And doesn't it look painful when he walks?
Yes, it does.
I mean, it looks like that he's in agony. But he says that he's fine. It's just developed that little role. And but I just did not forecast, you know, the first round victory over Berrettini. Nor did I see him, you know, winning against Kokkinakis. But there goes the, you know, proves the point. You can never discount the great champions.
Can he go again? Like 2 5-set matches, and now he plays Roberto Bautista Agut, who's a good player. I mean, how's he, a 4 a.m. finish? Can he go again?
Look, I did not think that he would beat Berrettini. I did not see his body rebounding to have enough in the energy bank to beat Tanasi. And you've just pointed it out. How does he respond? How does the body respond after 2 5-set matches? He finishes at 4 a.m. Lord knows, he's probably just climbing into bed now after all the media, the treatment that no doubt he would have had to undergo. I have no idea, but I tell you, the tournament organisers better be kind to him. I mean, I think they did help him with, you know, giving him as much time before Kokkinakis. They're going to have to give him the best that they can schedule in order for him to have a chance against Bautista.
We're talking to Mark Woodford, SEN tennis commentator. So whenever we have these finishes, you know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, it does generate a lot of debate. Is it ridiculous? Yep. Is there an alternative? I mean, what are your thoughts? What is the alternative to make sure this doesn't happen? Or is there not one with the, I guess, the fluky nature of Grand Slam tournaments with weather and scheduling and matches going longer than expected? Is there actually a way we can avoid these late finishes?
I think the only way to avoid it is if the tournament gets together. You know, they're one of four Grand Slams. And so the quartet, the four of them, obviously have, you know, ongoing meetings throughout the year. And they address certain elements, areas that might crop up. And I'm sure this particular, scheduling concern will be tabled, and the four leaders will have an internal discussion, and maybe the outcome is they decide that matches can't go on the court by that maybe they have 11 p.m. cutoff. Yeah. Maybe it is a little earlier. Maybe they say we can't put matches that allow you to play past 1 a.m. because there is that health side, player health, which we know. There's been a lot of discussion over the last few years about the mental health of players and how they recover and still remain in the game. So, you know, it's a hot issue. But don't these matches, don't they create so much attention and drama? And it's like the lifeline of Grand Slam tennis, these late finishes. It adds so much drama to the tournament. And, so there are two sides to it. But I think, they're probably, I wouldn't be surprised, a move towards, just making certain parameters. You can't put matches on past a certain time. And, if it gets to 2 a.m., like the buzzer presses, and, we'll see you guys come back tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty sensible suggestion, I reckon. I think that's the only way you can try and avoid it. But as you say, I mean, they're not dud matches, these ones that go to 3 or 4. They're the ones that we actually remember down the track, if you think, Leighton Hewitt, Marcus Baghdatis, going back a long way. Just on Novak Djokovic last night, I feel like he had a decent point, A, about the spectator heckling him, B, afterwards when he said, why do I have to bring it up? If the umpire's hearing it and the match referee can hear it, why am I the one that has to bring it up and look like the bad guy? So you got a fair point there?
Yeah, he does. And before I answer that, I will, if I can just revert back to the Murray match. You've got to remember also, back in Europe, it's a perfect time zone for the UK audiences. Mm. So all of Europe were up in the middle of the day, no doubt glued to the TV. So there's the issue as well of, do you balance it out? It might not be prime time here in Australia, but they're also, you've got to be conscious of the audiences that are overseas. So, that's something that the Grand Slams will tend to, no doubt. But regarding the issue with Novak, I was concerned. It's very difficult in our booth. If you saw the booth size that BP and
it's
I are
pretty calling small.
In, we've got like 5 screens in there. We're trying to keep track of, Popper and Dominar and Djokovic is on and it's just Bencic was out on court as well. So we were keeping track on Novak there, but he was not moving well. And it was a bit of a surprise that he actually, we were unaware of perhaps the heckling that had been going on. But, yes, why does it, you know, fall upon the player if they're that vocal? And I don't know exactly, you know, the nature of it, but why wasn't the chair umpire perhaps, you know, turning around and specifically pinpointing, you know, the individuals in the crowd? As it was quite hilarious because that half of the crowd on that stadium side, they all just started pointing and waving at those characters. And then when they were bidding them adieu as they were walking out the stadium. So, you know, it kind of made light of it in the end, but frustration for Djokovic. But I think that's more, you know, he's got to be concerned about the hamstring problem. And, look, he got through, you know, in a flash in that fourth set. So, I probably spent a bit of time on the table taking care of it because he's got a big match against Dimitrov ahead.
Yeah, he's certainly concerned about it, and he said that afterwards. So with Novak under a cloud, no Alcaraz here, Rafa's out, Casper Ruud was defeated yesterday, Alex Zverev was defeated yesterday, there's no Kyrgios. Right. Is there a chance here for a Popperin or a Demonor or both to go pretty deep in this tournament?
Yeah, you're writing the perfect script for us here in Melbourne at the Australian Open. Popperin, I mean, what an effort yesterday to take out Fritz and Alex, you know, uber professional, you know, proved his fitness and patience in that match. I think Alex probably was a little surprised to hear that his next opponent wasn't going to be Pablo Carreño Busta, which would have been a nightmare of a match for him. But, you know, there is that section of the draw, not just for Alex, but as well for Alexi. So, they can go deep. They've got, you know, different games. One is very offensive. And when he's lighting it up, he is super dangerous, which is Popperin. But you've just got that stoic defense of Demonar. And, he can go a long way as well. But look, on one half of the draw, there is certainly going to be some surprise players in the latter stages of the tournament. But what an opportunity to boost their careers.
Absolutely. It's all set up beautifully in some of the big names in the women's side in action today. Mark, thanks for getting out of your jammies and taking our call. Now go and have a couple of ski double ups and get ready for a big day five down at Melbourne Park.
I know I need a cuppa as well to get me going, but I appreciate the time and we'll speak again soon.
Look forward to it. Mark Woodford, he is a good sport and a great analyst of the game, and we've enjoyed having his company a couple of times here on Mornings and also the Captain's Run. That was for the all-electric Kia EV6 GT supercar, a pinnacle of engineering, Kia EV6 GT. This is the Captain's Run for State Transport. Our people are your solution.
It's 4-day sale time at Harris Scarf. Hot deals on a wide range of homewares and fashion. You won't believe this.